From the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Monday, May 5th. I'm Abby Larico. Kickboxing practice is a form of empowerment and self-defense for a group of LGBTQ folks in St. Louis.
I've never learned to fight, and I am kind of tired of feeling scared all the time.
It's called Queer Fight Club, and we are going to talk about it coming up after this news on The Gateway. A measles exposure in St. Louis has the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services warning of potential local spread. A person from out of state with a confirmed case of measles reportedly visited the St. Louis Aquarium the afternoon of April 30th, according to a Sunday night DHSS memo. The person also ate at a restaurant that same day, but no further details have been provided yet. The state health authority says anyone who may have been exposed and who is immunocompromised or does not have the MMR vaccine should contact their health provider. This is the second known case of measles in Missouri, following a confirmed report in Taney County last month. The CDC has tracked more than 900 cases in 12 outbreaks this year. St. Louis County Animal Care and Control Adoption Center is continuing to fight the worst outbreak of parvo it's ever experienced, with the deadly virus spreading through the shelter over the last month. As STLPR's Andrea Henderson reports, county health officials say one dog in the shelter's care still has the virus.
The county's animal shelter identified a case of parvovirus on April 19th. Staff and volunteers quickly disinfected and isolated the area to prevent the spread of the virus. During that time, more than 200 dogs were in the county's care. The county euthanized 19 of those dogs because they tested positive for the virus and were showing symptoms. County Health Director Kanika Cunningham says they are continuing to monitor dogs and deep clean the facility.
I think this was a lesson learned that as we go through outbreaks, making sure that we have the proper space to be able to isolate and quarantine. We can't prevent outbreaks, but we can do what we can to make sure we have the appropriate spacing and resources available.
The shelter and adoption center is closed until further notice. I'm Andrea Henderson, St. Louis Public Radio.
The leader of the St. Louis Board of Aldermen is once again going to court over a governor-appointed board overseeing the city's police department. Board of Aldermen President Megan Green filed a lawsuit in state court Friday, arguing that the bill with the police board language in it violates a constitutional prohibition of legislation with multiple subjects. The suit also contends the bill contains an unfunded mandate for the city police department and stifles city officials from speaking out against the board's decisions. This is the second lawsuit Green's been a part of against the police board. She was a plaintiff in a now-dismissed federal suit over the matter. St. Louis's newly elected comptroller says she has referred problems at the city's tow lot to federal prosecutors. STLPR's Rachel Littman has more on Friday's announcement from Donna Berenger.
The problems at the lot were documented in an internal audit done by the previous comptroller. The review looked at tow lot operations between July 2022 and September 2024. Auditors found an $86,000 discrepancy between the city's accounting system and a report from a statewide criminal justice database. Tow tickets were missing, and the vehicle inventory was poorly maintained. Previous audits, dating back to 2018, had also found problems with internal accounting procedures. In a letter to prosecutors, Berenger calls it her duty to report the findings. The U.S. Attorney's Office would not confirm or deny that it had received the letter or the existence of any investigation. I'm Rachel Littman, St. Louis Public Radio.
A bill headed to Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe's desk would stop the state's child welfare agency from seizing federal benefits like Social Security from children in foster care. Last fiscal year, the Children's Division spent more than $10 million from foster children's benefits to offset the cost of their care and services. State Representative Ashley Ani from Platte County is the House Minority Leader, and she says the bill provides foster children with more support as they enter adulthood.
It seems to me that leaving these kids with no resources when they begin their lives, when they age out of the system, is just absolutely cruel.
The measure is part of a larger bill that would also make it illegal for anyone under the age of 18 to get married. More states are eliminating sales taxes on groceries. Illinois recently made the move to end the tax starting next year. And as Harvest Public Media's Jim Meadows reports, Missouri is among other states considering it.
Only a handful of states still charge sales taxes on groceries, including South Dakota and Missouri. Lawmakers in Missouri are considering legislation to end it. Amanda Berry with the group In Power Missouri says the state's residents spend an average of $60 a month just on taxes for groceries.
And so $60 a month to a person who may only be making $2,000 a month, of course, is disproportionate compared to somebody who may be making $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 a month.
The bill in Missouri would also phase out local grocery taxes, which has raised concerns from municipalities over lost revenue. I'm Jim Meadows, Harvest Public Media.
A commission will soon study adjusting the boundaries between Illinois and Indiana, with the Hoosier State interested in welcoming parts of Illinois that want to secede. St. Louis Public Radio's Will Bauer reports Indiana Governor Mike Braun signed a bill into law to create the commission without any Illinois representation.
The commission will have 6 appointees from Indiana. It calls for 5 people from Illinois, too, but that won't happen because the Illinois legislature hasn't even passed a companion bill out of committee. G.H. Merritt, who's long advocated for forming a new state, says the real motivation of this new Indiana bill isn't about redrawing maps. After talking with the Indiana House Speaker's staff, Merritt says Indiana lawmakers see it as advocating for Chicago suburbs in Indiana.
And they see what is going on in Chicago and Illinois economically, financially, and they're trying to send them a message that they need to correct course.
33 downstate counties in Illinois have passed symbolic referendums about creating a new state separate from Chicago since 2020. I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Although international students in the St. Louis area had their immigration records restored and visas reinstated last week, attorneys say they shouldn't travel until their records are retroactive. Jim Hacking of St. Louis is one of many immigration attorneys nationwide fighting to make ICE close any gaps in dates on erased CVIS records. Hacking says many students have 2 or 3 weeks of breaks in their records, which could put them at risk of not being able to return to the country if they leave.
It might prevent you from being able to change your status here in the United States. And so that would be obviously a big burden for people, especially given the fact that the State Departments are revoking the visas, which are the tickets into the United States.
Hacking also says students with any criminal records should read the government's new policy on how immigration status can be terminated. Now that President Donald Trump's 100th day in office has come and gone, Missourians are sounding off on some of his initial moves. STLPR's Jason Rosenbaum talked with voters who previously backed the GOP chief executive.
Trump's flurry of activity has excited Paul Scott, a home builder from Odessa in western Missouri, who enthusiastically backs the president's bid to restrict immigration.
He's doing 1,000 times better this go-around.
Bryant Kagi, a farmer from Maysville in northern Missouri, reluctantly voted for Trump last year. He says he's been dismayed by Trump's embrace of tariffs.
We can take care of ourselves, and we generally want less government interference into the work we do, and tariffs are right up there with it.
Kagi says he hopes backlash over the tariffs prompt Republicans to once again embrace free market principles, as they did when George W. Bush was president. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
You can hear more about what Trump's local fans and detractors have to say about his first 100 days in office on the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. You can find that wherever you get your podcasts. When you hear Fight Club, you may think of the movie where guys beat each other up for fun. But a local group of LGBTQ kickboxers has made its own club of the same name to learn self-defense. As St. Louis Public Radio's Abigail Wetteroff reports, these fighters are packing punches and fostering a safe space.
Members of Queer Fight Club meet weekly in a bright open room with hardwood floors and mirrored walls. People are chatting and joking around as they wrap their hands in preparation for boxing practice.
Whenever I started this club, I was really, really, like, full of rage.
That's Mad Green, who runs the class.
I had this feeling that straight people think queer people are soft and think that queer people are, like, emotional sissies, and even if they love us, they don't expect us to be strong. and aggressive and defensive, and I really wanted to shake that.
Queer Fight Club is meant to serve as an empowering safe space where LGBTQ folks can gain confidence by learning self-defense. Zia Messina is a relatively new member who just finished their second class.
I oftentimes feel unsafe, especially at night. I've never learned to fight, and I am kind of tired of feeling scared all the time. So I really wanted to learn how to defend myself.
Queer Fight Club began as a piece of social practice art for Green's MFA thesis at Washington University. Tad Schulte-Johns has been involved since the club's inception. They vividly remember the first 12 weeks of the project.
You know, Mad would interview us, or they would, you know, film and record us hitting. Or there was one class that we did after we lost our first gym space. We dipped our feet into paint, and we did a whole class on the ripped up mats from our old gym space.
Queer Fight Club has evolved into a more typical workout class since then. But Green says the spirit of creativity still comes through.
Most people say that they are coming for community. I think the election has changed those answers a little bit. A lot of people are saying they're scared now, which I think is, you know, realistic. Still, one of the most common answers is that they're searching for community.
That sense of belonging was one factor that brought Zoe Castro to Queer Fight Club just under a year ago.
Having the community be queer people mm-hmm. has truly allowed me to just, like, be myself. And I feel like that has allowed me to not have to overthink or put any extra energy into thinking of how I'm being perceived because mm-hmm. I feel comfortable in the space.
Other members were looking for a supportive place to practice a new skill. Jeff, who has taken martial arts classes at other gyms in the past, says the camaraderie of Queer Fight Club sets it apart.
Having a from the get comfortable environment where, you know, I felt safe to get back into it and to make mistakes and to be tired whenever I was tired was really encouraging and really led to me, you know, coming back.
The club has made a positive impact on many of its members' lives. One of them, Anna, said that coming to practice each week just makes her feel better.
I always leave practice feeling way better about the day and way more energized and almost like hopeful in a way. Like I feel like it gives me hope to see a bunch of queer people who are consistently getting stronger and like encouraging one another and like learning how to defend ourselves.
Membership has skyrocketed over the past few months. Green says that growth has been encouraging to see. However, the club's transition into somewhat of a small business, they say, can be bittersweet. They are reluctant to advertise Queer Fight Club's meeting place out of fear of harassment. That's why St. Louis Public Radio is withholding the last names of some of its participants at their request.
The, like, realness of it kind of threw me for a loop, because part of me wants this to stay underground and keep it secret, and you have to have, like, a password to come in. But then this other part of me wants to, like, have our own gym space with, like, mm-hmm. a storefront and, like, be, like, so loud and, like, so legit.
Queer Fight Club recently reached the milestone of competing in its first event, traveling to Seattle to fight in a queer and trans martial arts tournament in March. And it's always accepting new members. From the undisclosed location of Queer Fight Club, I'm Abigail Wetteroff, St. Louis Public Radio.
Abigail was our STL PR Spring Newsroom intern. Thank you so much for your work, Abigail, and we're wishing you all the best. Our Jonathan All edited that piece. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.